I'm so grateful to have the guests that we do have. Let me say hello to them now, because what we're talking about is what's going on in higher ed. Now, if you are the parent or the grandparent or a friend of someone who is getting ready to go to school in the fall for the first time, the class of 2024, or you're thinking about making a commitment, you may have questions about what's going on with deadlines coming up. You might be nervous about what this means. We're going to talk in a moment to presidents and leaders of institutions to help you with that. We're also wondering about just the state of affairs on campuses when it comes to being able to pay employees, being able to keep operations going, being able to continue to educate students. With us on the line is Sarah Mangelsdorf, president of the University of Rochester. President Mangelsdorf, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Evan.
Also with us is Joyce Jacobson, president of Hobart and William Smith Colleges, is with us from WEOS. Joyce, welcome. Thanks for taking the time.
Thank you for having me.
Hello to Denise Battles, president of SUNY Geneseo. Hi, Denise.
Hello, Evan. Glad to be included.
Well, thank you. And Joel Frater is the executive dean of MCC's downtown campus. Joel, welcome. Thanks for taking the time.
Thank you, Evan. It's a pleasure to be here.
President Battles, all of our guests are sort of representing, you know, from the SUNY world, MCC, community colleges, private institutions. We're trying to be as well represented as we can. We did reach out to NAS and Fisher. They declined to participate. But I'll start with Joyce Jacobson, president of Hobart and William Smith, who reached out to us with that question about what students and prospective class of 2024 students might be thinking. What do you want them to know about deadlines and the pressures that they may be feeling right now, Joyce?
Well, I think it's very hard to know right now how you're going to feel in the future. The governor announcing May 15th, that's still a good 3 months off from when we would normally be starting activities on campus. A lot can change in 3 months. So we're basically telling students at this point, if you think you want to come, you should put down a deposit. If you decide to defer, that's always an option later. But plan as if this will actually be happening, because I would like to think that higher education is essential, that the governor and the rest of the country will realize that, and that we will be able to start our campuses on time in the fall.
Okay. Let me ask the other guests to address that as well. President Mangelsdorf.
I have the same philosophy as Joan. I'm ever hopeful that we will be able to have our students on campus in the fall, and we urge those who are interested in attending in the fall to tell us if they want to come. And as the time gets closer, if we have to reevaluate and think about deferring the start of our fall semester, we will. But for now, there's still so much that's unsure that we're hoping for the best.
Okay. Denise, what would you tell students in SUNY Geneseo's kind of campus and ecosystem?
Absolutely. And I would echo the comments of my colleagues. We are looking forward to welcoming the class of 2024. While there is much that is unknown, we are planning apace. One of the things that attracted me to SUNY Geneseo is our spirit of community, very palpable sense. And we understand that families and students are under stress. They're experiencing a lot of changes, and we've adopted our processes. So, for instance, we've reopened our application process to May 1 upon receiving a number of inquiries about Geneseo. We've also extended our timeline for students to commit. Usually that's May 1. We've extended it to June 1. We want to be mindful of the dynamics that are going on in families and also the uncertainty and accommodate these students, because we, too, believe that a higher education is absolutely essential.
Okay. Joel Frater, what would you tell students who may be going to MCC?
Well, we would say MCC is open for business. You should continue your admissions process. We remain committed to our open access mission as an institution. Students are accustomed to coming to us at the last minute, and we've always been nimble enough to respond to their needs, and we're planning accordingly.
Okay. Listeners, we'll try to address questions that you and students have had in our remaining 20 minutes with our guests representing the U of R, Hobart and William Smith, SUNY Geneseo, and MCC. President Mangelsdorf, I know you've gotten this question because we've already covered it, but the question leading up to this program that I got all morning long from listeners was this. If we're in trouble here on campus when it comes to revenues, paying people, especially with a research institution, and this is an important time for research institutions, and we're looking at furloughs, a lot of people are looking at a $2-plus billion endowment, and they're saying, sure, it might be earmarked for certain things, but you're not going to have programs left to earmark that money for. if you, you know, if we see this pandemic continue for very long, and can't you free up some of that money instead of making cuts? What would you say to that?
I'd say, well, we're continuing to spend from our endowment, but it is absolutely true that, say, someone donates money for undergraduate scholarships, and there's a gift agreement that says the money are, you know, for student scholarships. It's not for making payroll. It's not for normal operations. If somebody gives us money to fund our building up our new performing arts center, the Sloan Center, which is now sort of a halted project, construction projects are halted, we couldn't reuse that money for some other purpose like making payroll. It's just, it's not the way these things work. And even if we did have the money to cover, it just would not be, it would run out too. And you need the endowment also to get lines of credit in order to borrow money in order to keep the operation going in the long haul. An endowment is for the future of an institution, not just the present.
Yeah, I take that point. But if we get to an extreme situation, if a pandemic went on for much longer, if there was struggle to find a vaccine, and we saw a massive society-wide pullback here, you know, couldn't you eventually argue that, well, this money has been earmarked in certain ways, but we're not going to have much of an institution left if we don't use it, in this emergency? You can't do that?
Well, yes, if certain parts of it are unrestricted, and certainly that is what institutions do in absolute emergencies, and the parts that are unrestricted. And to the extent to which we're still spending when the endowment value is down, you are, in fact, sort of rating your future a little bit. But also, if the pandemic continues and you don't have people on your campus, then a lot of what you're paying for are programs you might put a pause on that you can't afford to keep running, right?
Okay. Fair enough. And I also know, President Mangelsdorf, that the question of understanding endowments is an ongoing battle that higher ed institutions face from the public, and I appreciate you indulging the questions. And we've gotten a lot of them. And listeners, again, if you've got questions or comments, it's connections@wxxi.org if you want to send an email. So let's just talk about what's happening individually on your campuses to kind of deal with what's happening for students. And I'll start with Joyce on this. When it comes to Hobart and William Smith, how many people you really have on campus now, and how has the transition in terms of learning and teaching gone?
Well, it's got actually better than we thought it would. We had a spring break of 1 week, and in the course of 1 week, we basically pivoted from in-person, high-intensity learning to remote learning, and it has really been an interesting journey. I think we've learned a lot from it that we can use in the future also. Admissions, obviously, advancement, communications, same pivot. We still have about 10% of our student body on campus. Kids really had nowhere else to go, international students that can't return, other people who have sick persons at home. So we are continuing to run skeleton operations, including skeleton food service with takeout on campus. Otherwise, everybody else is pretty much working at home. And luckily, we benefited from having a strong backbone with our information technology services, our digital learning specialists, our Center for Teaching and Learning, and they all pivoted. We continue to do things remotely, including having online counseling, online teaching assistance, and many of the things that we do in person. It's not the same. I like to say we're trying to do okay but not great, because we think in person is the way to go, but we are able to get through this.
Okay. President Jacobson, Andrew on Twitter is asking, are tuition cuts on the table if the fall semester is also online?
I think at that point we would prorate if we did need to start remotely. We would certainly think about that, because we have, of course, learned that remote is not as great as in person. So while we just did room and board refunds, as pretty much every other school did, we refunded half of room and board for the spring semester, prorated by aid. We would then look into tuition at that point also if we ended up having to start remotely.
Okay. President Battles at SUNY Geneseo, how are things going in terms of, you know, just keeping things going for students, keeping the education happening? How would you describe what's going on, and what's the campus look like?
Well, sure. Like I've heard from my colleagues, we have fewer students on campus, of course, than we did before mid-March. We did offer the opportunity for students who didn't have other alternatives, viable alternatives to shelter on campus. Normally, we house about 60% of our student body of roughly 5,500 undergrads. We're down now to probably fewer than five dozen who are sheltered on campus. However, we have a fair number who are living off campus. We draw heavily from the New York State, the New York metro area, and I think for a lot of those students, they saw Geneseo as a very desirable island of calm in a storm. And so they saw our village, our environment, as being very friendly and safe, and so many of them returned to the village. In terms of how we're doing, in terms of offering our education, we do prize, and it's Geneseo hallmark, the face-to-face engagement that we have here at the college. But we've toggled to remote learning remarkably well. We've had a lot of innovation among our faculty, everything from assembling lab kits so students enrolled in sciences can continue their studies, to colloquia that we're holding and drawing great attendance and getting good feedback on. So I will say that while it isn't perfect, echoing Joyce's comments, we've shifted remarkably well.
Okay, and would you consider a tuition reduction if it's still online learning in the fall?
That's not something that we're talking about at this point. Like many institutions, we're in the process of identifying either credits or refunds for room and board and selected fees. That's not a discussion that we've engaged at this point.
Okay. Joel Frater at MCC, tell me about how things have gone dealing with this pandemic there.
Yes, so we rapidly moved to an online platform or remote platform for delivering instructions for our students. We were able to shift 99% of our classes online within a week. That's gone very well for us. We've had a long tradition of offering some online courses, and as one of the leaders with the SUNY online program, we had the infrastructure in place to move somewhat rapidly in this direction. Our students and faculty have made significant adjustments. Not all students were accustomed to instructions in this mode, but they've made the necessary adjustments. I think one of the hallmarks of what we do is the wraparound service we provide for students. So in addition to the classroom instructions and increasing our technological capacity, we've really honed in on the additional services students need, for example, counseling, tutoring, and I think one of the big challenges your students face in this isolated learning environment is mental health, and we've been very intentional in making sure those services are available. Community college students are usually at the lower end of the socioeconomic scale. And one of the most fundamental questions we asked ourselves as we moved into this new normal was, you know, how do we truly serve the most vulnerable students among us? And it wasn't a question of how do we serve the masses. Again, it was how do we serve the most vulnerable students, which is why our foundation stepped up to purchase over 200 laptop computers that were handed out to students. More recently, SUNY stepped in with an additional 200 laptop computers. We've explored ways to ensure that students can connect, you know, via Wi-Fi. They can remote into our campus software in cases where they're too expensive for them to purchase. So it's really about looking at the student in a holistic way and making sure their multiple needs are being met.
Yeah, I think that's certainly admirable. And Dean Frater, could you foresee a change in the cost of MCC starting in the fall if there remains an online learning, essentially online learning is the only option?
Yeah, we believe MCC is probably one of the best values anywhere in higher education. So at this point, it's not an active part of the discussion. I think we're more focused on how we can ensure that our students who are in need are being taken care of, whether remotely or in person. You know, how do we make those personal calls? How do we do welfare checks? How do we connect them to community resources and institutional resources to ensure their success? Because our students have multiple goals. Some are looking to get jobs. Some are looking to transfer to other institutions. We don't want to do anything to prevent them from taking advantage of, you know, the tremendous opportunities to continue their education or to find a job. You know, so we are still committed to delivering the services we've always delivered, you know, even though it's through a remote method.
Sure. President Mangelsdorf, how has learning shifted at the University of Rochester?
I think our faculty have done an amazing job with the support of our IT folks. I watched my husband first online course, and he showed himself 7 times before he could get it to look like he wanted it to. He uploaded it to the learning management system and had a black line across his face, and he deleted it to start all over again. But since then, he's been doing all these live classes on Zoom, and he's really enjoying it. And I think the students seem really engaged whenever what I overhear is from the hall. And it's, I mean, it's not as much fun as in-person instruction. And there's lots, I mean, those of us who really value residential experience, they clearly, the students will tell you there are lots of things they miss not being on our campuses this spring. But I think our faculty and our graduate students who are teaching assistants have done an amazing job of providing the best possible education they had can do under these circumstances with not much notice to get.
Sure. And who's still on campus?
We have about 800 students still living on campus, international students who couldn't get home, low-income students who perhaps don't have internet connectivity at home, students like that. And we still, like Joyce, we still provide food to them on a, you know, takeout basis and so forth. And they live in the dorms.
Can you foresee
socially
any
distance, of course.
Oh, of course, yes. I think we're all learning how to do that. Can you foresee any change in tuition in the fall if it's still an online learning model?
You know, Evan, we haven't discussed that yet because I think we're thinking about, you know, planning for the fall and then also thinking if we couldn't do the fall, would we defer the start date for the residential experience? And so if we did that and just changed the sort of calendar and ran through the next summer, for example, would, you know, if we were providing the same residential experience, if we were able to, which is certainly what we hope to do, we wouldn't anticipate reducing our tuition. But we haven't talked about what happens if part of the semester was online. What would that look like?
Okay.
But we will obviously have to contemplate that scenario.
And we've heard from a number of graduate students who are concerned with getting paid. What would you say to them?
Well, our students who are employed as teaching assistants are every bit as busy as they were when they were doing resident. They're still leading discussion sections. They're still helping with grading. And our students who are funded on federal grants as research assistants are still getting paid. The federal funding agencies have assured us that we should keep people on payroll and they should still be funded as research assistants. So for now, the students who had funding before still have funding, as far as I know.
Before the hour's up, I'd like to ask all of you to describe what you think this crisis will mean to your institutions on the back end of it. In other words, if you can sort of snap back to where you were before and life will look roughly the same for students, for faculty, for the mission, or if there will be any permanent changes. President of Hobart William Smith Colleges is Joyce Jacobson, and I'll start with you. Go ahead, Joyce.
Thank you. Well, I think, if anything, this has kind of underscored it, as Sarah was just saying, how important the residential experience is. So while I think we've learned some specific things about how to improve it by having some online access, admissions has learned a lot about other ways to reach out to people. I think we actually are fundamentally still saying that what we are doing is the right thing. We're actually about to unveil a strategic plan. And while the strategic plan certainly says, of course, things like we should do catastrophic planning as part of normal operations, otherwise we are still full speed ahead in saying that what we are doing is the right thing to be doing.
Okay. Is there any sense that you're going to have to change what you can offer or what you can do because of this crisis?
I would still like to think not. I mean, again, similar to Sarah, we obviously are looking at what happens with our endowment in terms of returns in the stock market. It's very up and down right now, but I still see this, and I'm a professional economist, as basically a blip in a long-term path of upward growth. And while we may have a recession following this of some length, nonetheless, it shouldn't affect our fundamental planning as an institution.
Okay. President of SUNY Geneseo is Denise Battles. On the other end of this, SUNY and a school like Geneseo, are you going to be back looking like it was? I mean, if we can parachute in 3 years from now, would we say nothing's changed, or would you say, you know, there will be some permanent changes?
Oh, 3 years from now. Well,
it feels like a world away, doesn't it?
It sure does. Yeah. When you compare over the last 3 weeks, even.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think societally, globally, we will be feeling the effects of this pandemic. There's no doubt that this will have long-term implications. But in terms of the impact on Geneseo, certainly our hallmark is our residential learning community. But beyond that, what it's showed to me is it's really highlighted the importance of having a strong and supportive community. And it surprisingly doesn't require, in all cases, the face-to-face to sustain that sense of a strong, vibrant community. That's, I think, what I've seen, and our faculty and students have stepped up, and staff have stepped up remarkably. They pivoted on a dime to move to remote education when we're not an institution that was deeply involved in, say, online learning previously. But because that sense of a strong, vibrant community really permeates everything we do, that has helped us tremendously in making this pivot. And I think that what it will do is it has opened up us, not necessarily in the way we would have intended, but it has shown us some ways to exhibit community when we can't literally all be together in the room, whether it's via online methodologies, whether it's through videos, whether it's social media. Mm-hmm. There's been a lot of creativity that I've seen out of my colleagues, and I think that's really what's sustaining us.
Okay. Joel Frater, Executive Dean of MCC's downtown campus. What do you think?
I think one of the first observations is that we've debunked the myth that education, higher education, isn't nimble. And if you look back at how rapidly we pivoted to this remote platform to ensure continuity of learning for students is an indication that we are responsive to societal needs, we're responsive to our students. You know, much of what we do will be dependent on the consumer appetite. If we pivot more toward online, that will be influenced heavily by what our students are asking us to do. You know, this journey is going to tell us a whole lot about what our students are looking for.
Yeah.
And I suspect at the end of the day, there are some students who will be asking for more online learning opportunities, and there are those who are going to say, this is not for me.
Yeah, sure. I think at the end of this, some of us might have had enough of Zoom, but we're learning how to use it. That's true. And President Mangelsdorf, down to our last minute, what do you foresee at the U of R?
Well, like others have said, there have been some interesting things that we might not have learned otherwise. For example, at our medical center, we've really increased our use of telemedicine. And I heard from our Department of Psychiatry that there are fewer cancellations of visits when they're just doing them via telemedicine. Then if they have car trouble or child care trouble, no, they can just go in the other room and talk to their therapist. So we've been really great increased our use of telemedicine. What we've learned about online instructional delivery, I think, will carry forth and be used. I don't think it's the as some articles have said, that there won't be the end of residential education.
No way.
We know it. I don't think so at all. I think this social distancing is hard. Our students want to be together. But I think it has taught us we could reach more broadly and reach other audiences and other students via online techniques that we haven't been reaching before.
I want to thank all of you for taking the time hanging in there as we waited out the governor's news conference. And let's talk again soon. Sarah Mangelsdorf for the University of Rochester. Thank you, Sarah.
Thank you.
Joyce Jacobson at Hobart and William Smith. Always good. Thank you, Joyce.
Thank you.
President of SUNY Geneseo, Denise Battles. Thank you, Denise.
You're most welcome.
And from MCC's downtown campus, Joel Frater. Thank you, Joel. Hope to see you soon.
Thank you. Great to be on your program.
Wonderful to have all four of you. And let's take a short break. More connections coming up.